We are going to go into the last portions of the Ten Commandments tonight. I think we'll be able to make it through. Depends on how our discussions go when we talk about thou shalt not commit murder. But in something that Todd said the other night, reminding us when we were talking about taking the Lord's name in vain, and it didn't dawn on me, and I didn't even realize it, until he started talking about the things we do in God's name, like attack other people, try to take over countries. And, you know, he used the Crusades as an example, but I continually use the, it brought me back to our own country in the Revolutionary War. There was almost a religious fervor to the fighting, and in the Civil War, although it seems like a lot of the Southern generals prayed a lot and invoked God to smite those heathen Yankees, it went the other way too, because they had some very, very devout, thank you, that's a good word, generals on the North side. Chamberlain was one, Hancock was another that come immediately to mind. So it's amazing what we can do, and we can ask God to allow us to do in his name, and it is something, again, as a reminder, that we have to be really careful of when we talk about God and ask him to do things. But tonight, we're moving on from the obedience to the Lord and honoring the Sabbath, the respect from mother and father, of the first five commandments and all that came in, because they were all God-centered, and everything was meant to go towards God for our salvation and everything else. But this evening we come to the last five, and these are actual moral and ethical rules for the people. They will refer back to what we did in the first five commandments, but these are literally for the people themselves. In following these commandments, we establish a framework for law and society that ensures the safety and smooth running of our communities. The penalty attached to them, including the ultimate penalty for lying, stealing, murder, and adultery, is not actually imposed by law, but rather by God himself. And we'll talk about that a little. But we're going to start off with verse 13. You shall not commit murder. How many of you have in your translations, thou shalt not kill? Exactly, and there's a problem, because the translations actually do not murder. And we're going to go into the reasons for that, but going up in, as I was growing up, as non-biblical as I was, you know, you would hear that on television. It was always, you shall not kill. I've heard it used for reasons not going into the military or doing other things. It's used today as anti-death penalty by a lot of churches, and we're going to discuss that part of it too, because there's a slight disconnect in what God actually says as opposed to what certain people are trying to get going. So, you shalt not murder. The commandment that forbids murder sees the killing of another human being as an act incompatible with the covenantal relationships that binds Israelites to God and to each other. And that's absolutely true. I like that. However, it does not forbid capital punishment. And if you turn to Deuteronomy 17, 2 through 7, or you read it on the paper where I put it down there, here is what is actually said about that. If there is found in your midst, in any of your towns, which the Lord your God is giving you, a man or a woman who does what is evil in the sight of the Lord your God by transgressing his covenant, and has gone and served other gods and worshiped them, or the sun, or the moon, or any of the heavenly hosts which I have not commanded, and if it is told you, and you have heard it, then you shall inquire thoroughly. Behold, if it is true, and the thing certain, that this detestable has been done in Israel, then you shall bring out that man or woman who has done the evil deed to your gates, that is, the man or the woman, and you shall stone them to death. On the evidence of two witnesses or three witnesses, he who is to die shall be put to death. He shall not be put to death on the evidence of one witness. The hand of the witness shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterwards the hands of the people. So shall you purge the evil from your midst. Now, when I was saying capital punishment, that is exactly what we're talking about here. It is the Lord says there are certain things that are just not allowed to happen in our communities, and you are to uphold it. And if, as it puts in here, the evil is done, what is done evil in the sight of your Lord, your gods, by transgressing his covenant, serving other gods, etc., which I have not commanded, that is punishable. Now, question time, what is it that you would think would fulfill this need to stone somebody? What offenses? What would be authorized to take you out to the city gates and stone you? And the key words in here literally is what is evil in the sight of the Lord your God by transgressing against his covenant. Now, this is it can go into bearing false witness, and we'll talk about that for a few minutes. Making foreign idols and worshiping them. Worshiping the sun and the moon, which amazingly enough was something that was done in Egypt before the Exodus. So you have these, and they go against everything that the Lord said, don't do and make me senior to you, for I am a jealous God, in the last couple of weeks. So it gets very, very, very specific. But it also adds into there that you can take the person out. However, there are some rules you have to follow about. If you hear about it, you've got to report it. And if it's reported, it has to be investigated. However, if it's investigated, there has to be witnesses. And one witness won't work. You cannot put to death because one guy looked at the other and said, well, he did such and such. I saw him worshiping cats in the hallway the other day. If there's nobody else to bear it out, it is not a punishable offense. That's why it takes two or more. But also, it lays on you, and one of the things that makes it so interesting is the provision that if you bring a charge against somebody, the witnesses are the ones that have to throw the first stone. They're the ones responsible for hitting them first. That's followed up by the rest of the community, so it is a social community responsibility to continue an orderly life within the community. You follow that reasoning? Now, as I said, they change things around in the world today, and all the churches, to be by God's law, they're sitting out there for murderers and thieves and rapists and child molesters, saying, well, we got to be kind because it's cruel. Not following the Bible. And they're actually going against God's word. Now, what's going to happen on that one? I have no, that's between them and God. I do understand the feeling when I was growing up. I thought, thou shalt not kill. That's really great. We really should never kill anyone. And we should not cause damage to anyone, take life away from somebody else, because it's just the right thing to do. And so I can very easily see where, and as some of our translations do have it, thou shalt not kill. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thought. Not there, I don't think we'll ever get there. Questions, comments on that? Because there are more caveats to that. That see, and that is a good part. You know, thou shalt not commit adultery. That is a stonable offense. But as Jesus said, first guy here, that yes and no, because there is the provision for that in Deuteronomy that the man goes to. But I think in that particular case, they had brought the woman and they were testing Jesus because they thought they could say, well, if he sides with her, well, then he's disobeying God's law. And if not, we can get him to pick up a stone and he can help us, and that way we're right and we're wrong. Exactly. Well, when you're trying to, you know, this will come under the false witness against your neighbor too. And that's the other side of it. But that's actually right. And he was able to say, you know, that did not answer the question, just ask that one question. Hey, go ahead and do it, but let the one without sin go ahead and do the deed. As follows with this here, okay, you guys are the witnesses, so, you know, two of you, just start hacking throne if you have no sin in your own life. So, and it was a thought to make people think about what they were doing and were they correct in doing. You can also deviate really into the area of forgiveness, too. And the next caveat that comes under here was something I struggled with when I found myself going into ministry, and that was what happens in war? I mean, to be perfectly honest, we have a standing armed forces that that our requirement is to keep the country safe. And to do that, you're going to end up having to take life at some point. And how did that go? Well, chapter 20 in Deuteronomy, we're not going to go through it, actually has the list of rules for conducting war. And this has been challenged many times. In the 60s, the powers that be actually got together, religious powers that be, came forward with the just war theory. And they tried to define what a just war was and what an unjust war was, where the military, okay, it's okay, and you can be absolved from those particular type of sin of killing someone else, and under what circumstances you weren't. Martin Luther did an absolutely wonderful reading, and I know because I talked to my pastor about it, because I was still on active duty when I started all my little thoughts. And Martin Luther was, you know, pretty much backed up by what Paul said, was we need the military and we need the police officers and everything else to keep order out of chaos. And if you're performing your duties as you're supposed to be, and it involves taking a life, then you are still working with a competent government to protect the life and society. Made me feel a whole lot better. There is that consideration. One of the reasons sniper schools are so hard to get through is because there is a mindset involved, and it's as much psychological as it is in other points. But snipers that I have talked to, run across, had fun with, their whole mindset is, I am doing a job, because if I take out that other person, that person has done something wrong or is preparing to do something wrong that can either hurt civilians or, quite frankly, my comrades in arms. So there is that, or another sniper. And unfortunately, within this whole thing, again, a lot of it depends on your upbringing and your morals and your ethics, because we have whole generations of teenagers that are committing murder in our country today. They just don't know any better. They have been taught this is the way you solve your problems. When we were doing the evacuation, we did get classes. But one of the rules of engagement is that is if I saw a civilian running towards me and people were trying to kill that civilian, I could do nothing about it. If they pointed the weapon at me and I could prove they were pointing the weapon at me, then I could return fire. But there are rules of engagement out there that go right and left. So, and war is, again, one of those other things, because a lot of people consider, and a true conscientious objector, you know, it's the taking of a life, and that is wrong. And my heart goes out to any conscientious objector, and I agree with that. So, you know, that's where we run it. Go back into the words that you just said there. God commanded them to do this for a specific reason. And part of it is they were unrepentant idol worshippers. And they had been given the chance, and God just said, and they said no, and God said, go ahead and do it anyway. So yes, you can go to 20, chapter 20 of Deuteronomy, read it for yourself, and there's some really interesting stuff there. But as I said earlier, not all killing is murder. And there are also regulations that deal with accidental killings. And that's in 19:1-13. When the Lord your God cuts off the nations whose land the Lord your God gives you, and you dispossess them and settle in their cities and in their houses, you shall set aside 3 cities for yourself in the midst of your land, which the Lord God gives you to possess. You shall prepare the roads for yourself and divide into 3 parts the territory of your land, which the Lord your God will give you as a possession, so that any manslayer may flee there. Now this is the case of the manslayer who may flee there and live. When he kills his friend unintentionally, not hating him previously, as when a man goes into the forest with his friend to cut wood, and his hand swings the axe to cut down the tree, and the iron head slips off the handle and strikes his friend so that he dies, he may flee to one of the cities and live. And the reason for that being such a great thing is because, since God knows us so well, otherwise the avenger of blood, next of kin, best friend, or anything else, might pursue the manslayer in the heat of his anger and overtake him, because the way is long, and take his life, though he was not deserving of death, since he had not hated him previously. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall set aside 3 cities for yourself. If the Lord your God enlarges your territory, just as he has sworn to your fathers, and gives you all the land which he promised to give to your fathers, and if you carefully observe all this commandment which I command you today, to love the Lord your God and walk in his ways always, then you shall add 3 more cities for yourself beside these 3. So innocent blood will not be shed in the midst of your land, which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance, and blood guiltiness be on you. But if there is a man who hates his neighbor and lies in wait for him and rises up against him and strikes him so that he dies, and he flees to one of these cities, then the elders of his city shall take him, shall send and take him from there and deliver him into the hand of the avenger of the blood, the next of kin who, the next of kin of that which had been killed, that he may die. You shall not pity him, but you shall purge the blood of the innocent from Israel, that it may go with you. And the key in here again, it's intent. And it's like this said, if you're sitting out there and you accidentally take the life of somebody else, you have the right to go to one of these special cities and live there. And you cannot be taken away forcibly. But knowing people as they are, there will be people that in premeditation kill somebody through hate, through malice, and will go and they will try to lie about it. However, the people in the home city know about it. The elder's responsibility is to send for him, and when he comes back, have justice be done. And again, first strike comes with the next of kin. Okay? And this way, you purge the blood of the innocents from Israel, that it may go with you. So there is a give and take on this. There is... if you look at it rationally, it makes a lot of sense. Now, I have seen a lot of it, and I actually, the avenger of blood is a great thing, because I have seen it pop up. I don't want that person to be punished for what they did. I forgive them. And that becomes the right of the person who is the next of kin. Now, it was a while ago, but when the guy came in and shot up the Amish village and killed all the kids in the school, and it was the community got together and said, we don't want him to get the death penalty for this. He will be punished, and he will go to jail, but we don't feel that God would want us to take his life. And they went out and forgave him. And as I understand it, and I'm digging in my memory then, there was their reaction to him made a profound effect on the killer himself, because it was something he had never experienced before. There was love, there was caring. They cared about him, and they forgave him, which is an amazing thing. I have to admit, I'm not sure, even though I should, whether I could forgive for a period of time. So, you know, we have that. Yes, and that's the reason that I think that was put in there, that the Lord God commanded that if he did it with malice, that he did it in hate, and they use the word hate in mind, that's premeditation. I thought about it. I don't like you. And it, again, could tie into another. You have land I want. I'm going to kill you and take that land. And then you realize it's not quite going to work that way. You know, our minds can convince us to do many things. But yes, I think that's exactly right. It's whether it was done in malice or it literally was done by accident. He was taking out three of the commandments at the same time. Alrighty. Now, as you know, and it was, I did find it actually interesting that as I was going through all this, the murder was much more complex than the other four commandments. And of course, again, I did toss in because I have read and I read about, and we discussed at length in seminary about the cities of refuge, which was an interesting concept. But now we come to you shall not commit adultery. The only real thing, now, this is adultery in the sexual sense. Take note that this is specifically against adultery and not other forms of illicit sexual activity. Other laws deal with these in chapters 22 and 24, and they are literally called sundry laws, more sundry laws, Sabbath in the land, property rights, those other things. So, national fields, conquests of love. Nope, that's 23. But you go on. Why is it that you think that adultery is in here as one of the Ten Commandments? Why did God include this as being one of the specific problems and one that is worthy of God's justice, especially? When we marry, and I will stick with being married in the church because it depends on which justice of the peace or magistrate you go to is how it is worded. But in the church, it is pointed out, this is a covenant between the man, the woman, and God himself. And when you profess your love for this woman and you are taking her as your wife, you are promising to be faithful to her. However, you're also promising God at the same time you are going to be faithful to your promise to your wife, because you are doing it before God and in his name. And it is in God's authority that we are married in the church. Now, state to state, I haven't done anything in here, but one of the requirements in Virginia, I was required to say by law, by the power invested in me by the Commonwealth of Virginia, I hereby pronounce you man and wife. Of course, nothing prevents me from, by the power invested in me by God Almighty and the Commonwealth of Virginia, I now pronounce you man and wife. Let no man put this asunder, meaning nobody came in. But the whole issue of adultery and why it means so much to the Lord is because, again, it's a promise between the two of you and it is a covenant with God himself. But the family is the basis of everything in the Jewish religion. Everything circles around the family. The laws of inheritance, the requirements for the mother and father to raise their children. The family is society. Society is order, not chaos. And if it's the same root word. Now, we have the Greek meaning for adultery that we find in the New Testament. But even if you go back in the Old Testament Aramaic, that word for adultery, the sin of adultery of sleeping with another man and the woman, has the same root word that God uses every time Israel messed up and went to other gods. Oh, you adulterous people. Oh, you adulterous generation. And he considers that the same thing. His covenants with the people were sacrosanct. They were not to be given up. And when you disobeyed the laws, especially the first five as we have read them, you are breaking the agreement with God himself. And you have created adultery in the relationship. As a person, as a group of people, as a nation. And while he punishes us, he doesn't completely kick us aside. That is the same basis as honor your mother and father. And again, we have here, don't commit adultery. Stay true to that person. Now, again, there are going to be caveats, and we've talked about this, I think, at times on Jesus in a couple of the Gospels does say you can get divorced if there is adultery. However, ideally, you do it right. You get to know the person. You're not married 6 days later or even 6 years. A year is not a bad time to get to know people. To actually get to know and to talk about the other people, so you're not walking into it blind. I could be a nice guy on paper and for the first 15 minutes and then a son of a gun after that. The next one is going to be a whole lot of fun. You shall not steal. Every commentary I had nothing on that. It just said, don't steal. And it's pretty plain that if it doesn't belong to you, keep your hands off of it. But I was also thinking earlier, says it, you can not only steal things, you can steal people's reputation. You can steal their ideas. You can steal their thoughts. You can steal their respect by our words and actions. So steal does go on, but, sir. I'm sorry? You're stealing somebody else's ideas and claiming it as your own. Yes. And it's not fair to the person that's done the work or who owns. Now, that does tie into one of the later, into coveting. Tie in very much because you want something somebody else has and you're willing to do anything you want to get it. Whether it be his job position, whether it be his car, the whole nine yards. So, anything on that? That one's really kind of straightforward. That was the easiest of the bunch. Now, next is verse 16. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And this is actually designed to uphold the integrity of the legal system by inspiring truthfulness and testimony. Still, such truthfulness is not a legal necessity, but a requirement of God. And one of the reasons that, back when we were talking about the judgment for murder, you have the two witnesses, and they're going to have to swear that this is what that person did, and they have to swear before God that he did it. And depending upon, in our judicial system today, it's pretty much the same thing. You swear or affirm, depending on how you feel. But you are making that, what I am going to say is truthful to the best of my ability. Because look at the damage you can do to somebody by telling a lie. Now, recently alluded to that, I want your position at work. I want to take over your job, so I make you look as bad as I can do. Something goes wrong, well, he did it. Something goes right, I did it. That type of a thing. I want that plot of land because it's a valuable plot of land. We just found out there's oil on it. Well, we just found out there's a windmill on it. And now it's worth a whole bunch of money. We want to do it. We can be very, very malicious. And unfortunately, one of the things that I have run into a lot is husbands/wives who are getting a divorce all of a sudden are telling the judge, well, he was abusing my child, or she was abusing my child. And the only reason that they're doing this is they want to hurt. Well, that's not one of the reasons. They want to hurt the other person and they want to win, no matter what the cost. And that's why, yeah, I'd like to say that they were worse than they are, but we have laws in our legal system against perjury, against saying things under oath that are not true, that you know are not true. Okay? So this is actually, don't bear false witness against your neighbor because of the damage it can do. And if it finds out, then you've, again, yourself have broken a commandment. Questions? Comments? Almost there. Verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. The big key there is don't covet or anything. Don't covet anything that doesn't belong to you. And I think we were talking about this and you hit it on the head. This breaks one of God's main commandments of putting something else above God. I want that guy's wife. I want his servants. I want his donkey. I want his car. Or I would like to have, and what am I willing to do to get it? Suddenly, if you want something enough, if you covet something enough, you are putting that object between you and God. It becomes an idol. And it goes back to right through the first time. Put nothing before me. I am supreme. And basically, that's why you do it. If you want something bad enough, earn your money, work hard, and get it for yourself. But also, don't worry about what somebody else has. God is going to provide for you enough of what you need. Be happy with what the Lord gives you. It may not be as much as the guy next door, but you know what? All things considered, maybe you're smarter than he is. It is. Yeah, and what is enough? Now, again, society will tell you, hey, you need the new car, you need the blah, blah. In fact, my Facebook thing is I've been following Tom Brady since his wife basically told him, you need to make a choice, it's time for you to retire, because me and the kids want to see you a lot more than we're seeing you. And I've been reading comments from the fan, oh, you can't do this to us, you have to stay in football and everything else. And one article this morning says, well, there are 13 million reasons why you should not retire from football this year. And basically what these people are saying is, for my own gratitude, because I want to watch a stupid game, I want you to not pay attention to your family, to not spend the time with your kids that you do. And in the article, Tom Brady needs another $13 million like he needs another head. But again, it's they are looking at it as, we don't care about your wife and your children. We're looking at our own gratification. And so that's the type of thing in covetousness. Now, okay, I won't. They'd love his money too, but we are looking beyond what we have. They're not thinking about the wife and the family. Because anybody that's that good works a lot and does not get to spend a lot of time with his family, just because that's the way it is. And it's a warning for the rest of us that you can work to take care of your family, but you need to spend your time with that family, or what in the heck are you working for? Because if you get so much in earthly gains, and you give it up, and you've got no one to share it with. You die old, nobody loves you, or they're estranged from you, or they don't know you, or they grow up and they raise their family in the same manner, then we've completely lost it. If you figure sitting in the middle of desert with a couple million of your best friends, yeah, this is, but it expands on that into our current community. Because everything we've said there, from having no other gods before me, not worshiping idols or having idols, to murder, coveting what your neighbor has, it falls, it's the same thing. Why do you, especially in our neighborhood, why do you covet something somebody else has? And why would you do it? And the same rules apply for that as they do now. Ethics 101. If God told you right now, and you were sure it was a command of God, to go out to my car and beat it to death with a sledgehammer, would you do it? How about if God told you and you sure it was God that you're supposed to go slay one of your kids? And the good Lord willing, we won't know that, and those are very, very extremes, but I put it in there. Because when God told those people to do it, he had a reason to send the armies in there. However, they didn't covet anything. They were doing what they were told. And in the laws of war in chapter 20, they said, if I tell you, you are to take the sword in your hand and use the sharp edge on all the men, but you can have the women, the grain, the gold and jewels, and the ox and sheep as your prize. So he's given it, that's a totally different set of circumstances as opposed to going home tonight and coveting something our neighbor has. They're in two different realms. What happened to those people that when God told you, you will kill everything and take nothing, what happened to the people that took stuff? They died horribly. God punish them for disobeying his rules. And that's it. If you want to take it that way, is there anything along this, anything we've talked about that you have questions or would like to steer me in another direction? Well, and that puts on, we are putting things before God that we think we should have. Well, I think keeping up with the Joneses starts to hit that line. But again, there is nothing wrong. I have never read anything wrong with being successful. Because, you know, there's so much that you can do with extra money or stuff. But it's how you treat the extra money and stuff. You consider it God's and treat it accordingly and use it as he would have you do it. You're hunky-dory. You can have billions. It's when, well, you know, that's really nice. You know, I'll get the widow's mite. Yeah, I'll give that $100,000 to the church and everybody be happy with me. You know, really doesn't mean a whole lot when you're making several billion dollars. That's a drop in the bucket. You're not making any sacrifice for the Lord. And you're absolutely right. There's nothing wrong with wanting something. Check with God if you can have it. Work towards you get it. I mean, that's what we should be teaching our children. That was fun. Any suggestions on what we should do next? You all got caught in it because I have, like I said, I have never done the Ten Commandments before, and I really wanted to.